I'd like to welcome you back to the Venus Tesla Connection. Our website is hello-earth.com, and today is February the 21st, 2012. This website's dedicated to Nikola Tesla, and he is the man from Venus. Tesla taught us how to make electricity, and he also taught us how to collect it for free. This is hour number three with my very special guest, Dr. George A. Freebot IV.
Yes,
hello, George.
You?
I'm really well.
Good.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Well, the last we were talking about the violet ray generator, Tesla's device that he made in the 1800s, and we don't have any more. It's basically not really available. They were available until, what, about 1952, something
well,
like
the,
that?
Well, the handheld models are still available. The company that manufactured them over the years is still there and alive and well for people to purchase. You can go on eBay and you can find a company called Electrotechnique that sells the handheld units. The briefcase versions or models that were brought out by Renew Life and a bunch of the other companies, and the amount of electrodes have gotten more scarce because it's not something that's normally used. It's just starting to come back into usage because of the suppression by the FDA of the device, of course. But it's every bit as beneficial as we were mentioning on the last segment of talks that when they start talking about all these different uses, I mean, we've seen it do marvelous things. So it's something that everybody, if you go into eBay, you can find different companies. We just a friend of ours just purchased one for $39.95 with the electrodes and everything. But it was about a third of the power of the ones that were available as manufactured by Tesla. So not quite nearly as powerful, and doesn't have the same effects. It takes longer to affect any type of a healing with it. But they're definitely out there, definitely out there, and we've been very involved with letting people know about them. So. Just finding them, and like I said, overseas they're still produced and still used to this day. And as a matter of fact, they sometimes can be found in the old cosmetology suppliers will have an old leftover model that they're just sitting on the shelves because once the FDA got down on them, they started only being used in cosmetology, and you didn't see them used in naturopathy and homeopathy and by regular practitioners like they were originally.
Okay, for the people who don't know what these violet ray generators are, they're like handheld Tesla coils.
Yeah, they're about 50. They range between from the low end from 10,000 up to 50,000 volts at about half of a megahertz, and I think 500 kilohertz, I believe. But
and it produces a violet color electricity in this little glass applicator.
Yeah, they're evacuated. Vacuum tubes, basically. They're single electrode neon tubes, neon argon tubes that have been they can be totally evacuated, in which they'll all glow one color, or some of the neon glass tube blowers will actually put in different noble gases, argon, krypton, neon.
Oh, I've seen them with like an orange color, which kind of surprised me. But it's still the same thing.
It'll still do the same. It's not. We happen to like the purple ones, the evacuated ones, much better. Or even the neons, you'll get a bluish.
I do too. I like that. I like that violet color.
Violet mostly is your totally evacuated ones that they do an evacuation on. They don't backfill them with any gases.
On the website, under the Secret of Lightning, I have a lightning bolt, a real big wide one that hit the earth, and you can see that violet color on both sides of the lightning bolt, which is the exact same thing as what Tesla did. Do you have any of Tesla's machines from his
Oh
Tesla
yeah.
Ozone company?
We have one in particular. Yeah,
You do?
there was one device that he spoke about, which was the vibratory unit that he used for cellular massage unit. And the cellular massage unit that he brought up was the one where he mentions and speaks about Mark Twain doing a treatment and then actually getting so relaxed, and it had such a tonic effect that he actually defecated on himself, urinated on himself, because
Yeah, I remember that story.
that unit we have several of those. And
You do?
all
Oh my
these are
gosh.
scheduled for being reproduced and put out to the people. That's and
Oh,
for
great.
but we've been we use them, and we have a number of we oftentimes will find a Tesla circuit. We have one that was done by the Allo company. And it has the actual Tesla terminal on it, which looks like a little, almost like a pyramid, but or a coned coil that comes on top of the machine with a round. You can't call it a toroid, really, but which is, you
Almost like
know,
a
it's like
halo.
a round steel steel ball that has a, and you plug your actual electrodes into it. And those electrodes actually go in this top of the steel, this steel ball that's situated on top of this on top of the like it almost looks like a pyramid. It's a cross between a pyramid and a cone, double half of a utron, a cone that. But it's actually a stepped cone, so it looks like numerous rings that go from the bottom of the.
Is this a
No,
logo you're talking
this
about?
is actually where you plug the where you plug
Oh.
in your electrode. Your because the Allo machine that we have is was quite the, it was like the large. I don't know if you've ever seen the large Wimhurst generators or static generators with the Leyden jars and the whole bit. But it's very similar to this. The Allo machine was very similar to that, only it had sinusoidal and galvanic currents on it, and Tesla currents on it, and it was a gift from my wife to myself as an antique, and it's quite the unit.
Oh, that's really nice. I'd love to see
Oh
a
yeah, no
photograph of that.
problem. Yeah, it's got a. It actually has this one portion that glows with this like crimson color, kind of reddish colory light, and then you take the electrodes. It has spark gaps on the front of it, about four or five spark gaps that you use for adjusting the output on the machine and everything. It's quite a unit.
And this was made by
No,
the Tesla
well, it was by the
company?
Allo company. It has the te Tesla. This and that
Allo
one has a
Company.
Tesla circuit in it. The other one has actually a Tesla. The other one I was speaking about was actually Tesla's mechanical oscillator, or not? Excuse me, mechanical oscillator. Excuse me, cellular massage unit. The cellular massage unit was produced for some time until they, again, they started taking the frequencies of the cellular massage unit and changing them and altering them because they had interference with radio waves and different television circuitry and radio waves, and they said enough of this when they stopped it, stopped the production of them. But oh yeah, there was a number of companies that were producing the Tesla machines for quite some time. So.
Because on the Tesla page, I have a couple machines that were shown in the Sears catalog
Right.
that were made by the Tesla
Right.
company.
Those are good, some neat pictures they had on there.
I have a bunch of the machines I have, the violet ray generators I have, are mostly by the company called
Renew
Renew
Life, yeah.
Life out of Detroit. And I guess they made them until, what, the early 50s when they were
Well,
stopped?
yeah, they tried in the 40s. They had court cases, I believe, in the 40s against different violet rays. But they were utilized. Like I said, they never really stopped them totally because the company that produced them still is in existence today. But in order to get the electrodes, you have to know the people that produce the electrodes. And but the handheld portion or the high voltage portion of it is used in the testing industry for testing of vacuum tubes to see where leaks are in the vacuum tubes. So any kind of neon, whenever you're blowing a neon tube, and if they want to test it for leaks or any type of leak on a neon tube or an X-ray tube or a Geissler tube, it'll show a leak in the tube. When you take the Tesla coil and you have a little metal electrode that with a point on it, and it puts that the high voltage arc, and if it has a leak, it'll arc to the leak. So they're still produced. They're just not called the violet ray. But the unit that you show in the picture, the Renew Life picture, that same handheld unit is still produced even to this day.
And the violet ray, when you put that on your skin, you eventually, within 10 seconds, you're going to smell
Oh yeah,
ozone
right away. It
because
implants.
it's breaking the oxygen in the air and also in the,
Right,
under
well,
the
the tube
skin.
itself is producing oxygen from that. This is why you always have the same purple, that same purple color whenever ozone's being produced. We produced a unit some years ago that the voltage, frequency, and amperage. There was some information that came out in the International Ozone Association's journal, and stating that there was a window effect at about 300, 300 to 400 kilohertz. That there was a window effect that you get this extremely potent potentiation of ozone production, and so we had tubes that were produced many years ago by the Octazone people, and I said, this doesn't sound right. The rule of thumb has always been whatever you're trying to drive, be it a generator, ozone generator, or a set of tubes, or a violet ray, or has to be in resonance to the driving circuit, and just to have a open frequency like that said that was ozone was produced in copious amounts at that frequency would totally depend on the style of tube that you were using, or the ozone tube that you were using, and or generator that you were using, and it didn't sound right. And sure enough, when we went to test it, we took a machine that went through the scale of voltage, frequency, and amperages we were able to move around to drive these ozone tubes. And at that kilohertz that they mentioned in the article, it didn't do anything on our tubes, our Octazone tubes. They actually heated up, and almost became more of in a meltdown stage than producing a corona of the purple that you always see with when you're producing ozone. But the reason that you have the colors is because of the noble gases in the air, and they all fluoresce in the red and blue frequency range, and red and blue makes purple. So whenever you see that photonic cascade that they call the purple corona, that photonic cascade effect, when you start to charge up the noble gases, when they begin to break down, this is why you even have that in the old days they called it the electrical odor of ozone. But that electrical odor that is being produced is because you're literally charging the gas in the air if you're putting air through it. You know, and even if you're putting medical-grade oxygen through tubes, they still get that same corona, the reason being that they can't totally withdraw or get all of the noble gases away, and all the noble gases fluoresce in the red and blue frequency range, like neon's blue, argon's red. You get the other noble gases, and we put red and blue. Red and blue equals purple. And this is why you have that color with the production of ozone. But
it's a beautiful color, and many times lightning, the whole sky turns purple. And when those lightning bolts are, I don't know, a mile or two over your head, maybe not over your head, but, you know, several miles away, you still smell ozone around you almost instantly. And isn't that because that electricity is coming all the way down, all the way through?
Well, the reason you have that, the odor, like I said, the old days they called it the electrical odor of ozone. There was an article published by the American Journal of Chemistry, I believe it was. It was the pharmaceutical chemistry, I believe it was. But they were talking about 8 molecular oxygen being electricity, and they were given the 8 molecular oxygen to a naturopath is octazone, and octazone is a compound that was a larger compounded oxygen group than even ozone. Which, of course, the FDA fought that and said, oh, no such thing exists. And yet it does. It very much does, because now they've proven there's compounds of oxygen that go all the way up into isotopic oxygen, up in the, you know, O21s. And it's large, large compounds of oxygen. But this has also been proven in the works of Novich Volnyov, and from the University of Moscow, where he talks about the alkaline earth metals and their oxides, peroxides, and superoxides, and ozonides. And this is what was being produced when ozone went down into the oils and they were breathing. They found that they could breathe ozone very effectively when they put it through oils like Pinus pimelionis oil or some of the other pine and other aromatherapy oils. And they found that they would create ozonides, and the ozonides then could be inhaled and could actually then actually be used medicinally in the lungs of patients. So it's the larger compounded groups of oxygen definitely do exist, and much to the dismay of the FDA and the AMA. So
breathing concentrated amounts of ozone is not dangerous.
Well, you want to take the amount you're used to. Like, you have to build up they did a test called the Armour test where they were testing mice in a strong concentration of ozone. And it says that the mice, they never go beyond the fact that the mice develop pulmonary edema. Some of the mice develop pulmonary edema the beginnings of the test when exposed to the ozone, but they never did it.
And what is
pulmonary edema?
It
says that the mice develop pulmonary edema, some of the mice, but by the third day, the mice grew strangely resistant to the ozone, and no more pulmonary edema was evident. Well, what they're talking about is detoxification of the garbage in people's lungs that they're inhaling. And so what does ozone do? Ozone turns compounds through the process of oxidation into what would be considered to be foreign gases or liquids. And when you get foreign gases or liquids in the lungs, what's the first thing the lungs seek to do? Expel them. How? By coughing. And what would they call that? They call it water on the lung, or pulmonary edema. And in reality, it's nothing more than a detox. It's the same thing that we go through if we were to inhale concentrations of ozone that are more than what we're normally used to. Yeah, I work in like 52,000 times allowable EPA standards for ozone, with no detrimental effects whatsoever from breathing, and actually beneficial effects. But it takes time to build up tolerance and get used to those concentrations, because you know, there's garbage in everybody's lungs, either from industrial pollutants or natural, you know, air pollution, and people doing whatever, having home, you know, fires in their home, or they're breathing some of the soot or some of the waste that's in the air, that gets in the air from having, you know, wood burning fireplaces and all the rest of it. Just basically overall toxicity of the air that people breathe all the time. And when they begin to liquefy, of course, you will get that same, quote, pulmonary edema, unquote, as they call it, which is nothing more to a naturopath than detoxification of the lungs. This is by the third day, the mice grew strangely resistant to the ozone, and no more pulmonary edema was evident, because this, they're telling them, in reality, it wasn't any kind of a malady. It was just a detoxification, which oftentimes is interpreted like fevers are, like the common cold is. A lot of times these detoxification or cleansing processes of the body are called sicknesses by the allopathic or regular medical profession. So the naturopath looks at it. Naturopath looks at it as a detox or a cleansing.
And after they've gone through that detox and cleansing, 3 days later, those mice or whoever would have cleaner lungs.
Lung, but they also would be a lot stronger. The mice also, you know, they then went on to talk about the growth factors in the mice and the quote, survivors. I mean, all they would have had to do to have them all survive is just take the ones that were getting this pulmonary edema and take them out of the flow for a bit. And then we introduce them not with a large, copious amount of ozone in the flow, but with a less intense concentration. If the concentration were less, then the mice probably would have, all of them probably would have survived and not had this water on the lungs, so to speak, or detoxification that they were going through.
So at one point you mentioned ozone, like O21.
Yeah,
did you say?
There's a book out. There's a book out all about oxygen. There's several of them. One's by Volnyov, and the other one is by I'm forgetting the name of which is totally on oxygen and all of its compounds, where they cover the you know, everything from oxygen to ozone to. Because there's a lot of people think that ozone is toxic and a toxic gas, but O1 is not toxic and has no odor. O2 is not toxic and it has no odor. Why is O3, all of a sudden O3, why do they consider it to be a toxic or a poisonous gas? You know, it doesn't make any more sense that O3 is toxic than O1 or O2 being toxic, especially since that's what it breaks down to in the body. But this is, you know, medicine can't. Many of the maladies of medicine would be dealt with strictly, just like Tesla states when he talks about the waters of the world being insufflated or charged with ozone. How many maladies that we would take care of and cure in people just by that one in his problem of increasing human energy, where he mentions the ozone in the waters of the world would do so much in increasing human energy and just overall health of the populace. So this is something that's covered even by Tesla. That's why this whole worry that people are always talking about and worrying about germs and disease, bacteria, and anything else. I mean, if you study the medical, even in medical documentation, the journal Science states that ozone is 90+% effective in eradicating human cancer cell growth, and 97 to 100% effective in eradicating the AIDS virus and killing the AIDS virus, and rendering blood purified through the utilization of ozonation of the blood, which the Canadians were using for some time, if they're not still, for purification of the blood for transfusions and that type of thing. So it's not, if it were poisonous gas, then we couldn't put it in our blood. It should hurt, harm the blood. Why wouldn't it harm the blood? If it supposedly will harm people, then why doesn't it destroy the blood and cause damage to the blood? But it doesn't. The ozone actually assists in purification of the blood. So there have been no numerous devices. The ultraviolet blood irradiation device I'm trying to remember his name now, but anyhow, the UBI, as it's called now, ultraviolet blood irradiation, the original machine was produced up in Seattle. That machine was very effective in again disinfecting the blood, and was actually utilized in physical therapy for a number of years, and was in regular medical practice. So they recognize the fact that it's effective, but now they're trying to convince everybody that it's toxic gas. And,
yeah, I often wonder about that. And when people say, "Oh, ozone's bad for you," or "It's toxic," or "It's not good," I said, "How can anything oxygen not
right.
be good?"
Most of all,
whatever
ozone,
form
most
it's
of all
in.
Ozone, because you know ozone's used in water purification, it's used in air purification, it's used in it's been used in medical equipment down through the last two centuries. And here they're talking about it being toxic. Well, it's not toxic, but it definitely will cause a detoxification in the person or the mouse or the whatever is subjected to it. But just like the Armour report, they only quote that portion of that report that they want you to hear, which is that mice developed pulmonary edema and some died because of this pulmonary edema. Well, that's true, but it wouldn't have happened if they had reduced the concentration of the flow that the mice were actually held in. And this is why it talks about them growing strangely resistant to the ozone, and no more pulmonary edema evident after 3 days. So it's we run air. As a matter of fact, we had an old Homozone machine on just a little while ago, which is from the 30s and 40s that we were putting it with a strong concentration in the air because my wife wasn't feeling quite well, and sat her in the room with a huge concentration as compared to normally what they tell you that you're supposed to have in the air, and feeling much better. She's up with everybody and feeling just fine. So it's
right.
You know, the utilization of that combined with Tesla when he was doing the cellular massage unit, that again was just frequencies. He went from the vibrational platform that he used with Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, and he actually went into doing the same thing electronically or electrically, and this was called the cellular massage unit. Which actually caused the cells of all the cells in the body to have a vibratory action that was produced on the cells, which helped them to detoxify and cleanse.
And was this part of vibrating the cells with?
He was doing it electrically. Initially, he did it mechanically, and then did it mechanically and electrically both. And then ultimately they split it into mechanical vibrational units of Tesla, similar to the mechanical oscillator, and then the cellular massage unit, which was a pre-diathermy type of treatment that was used frequencies that Tesla used within his machines that were ultimately they stopped using those frequencies. But because of interference with radio signals, television signals, that type of thing. But if you can get to the older, this is some of the older diathermetic units that they used in the early part of the century, like 1890s to 1920s. You'll find that these are the frequencies that Tesla was using.
When you first got interested in ozone, is this when you met Arthur Matthews when you were 23?
Well, I had, because of my naturopathic schooling, we were taught in electrotherapy. We had the College of Electrotherapeutics in Ohio actually had a textbook that teaches about the Odin, Morton, D'Arcenval, and Tesla circuits that were used in electrotherapy. And that's where I first heard about Tesla. And that was probably 44 years before I, or so before I heard about Arthur Matthews.
And Arthur Matthews, here we can maybe switch gears a little bit here, but Arthur Matthews, his book, The Wall of Light, when I'd ask a friend of mine who was real familiar with a lot of UFO stories, whether it's Betty and Barney Hill or Travis Walton or any number of them, because there's just so many now, that when I asked them what UFO story involves Nikola Tesla, and what's the title of the book and who's the author? They don't know what UFO story involves Nikola Tesla.
Sure, they don't talk about it. Some of one or two of the people that channel stuff about Venusians and Nikola Tesla, but you never really hear about Arthur's story. The reason why is part of it has to do with religiosity, because they are talking about Jesus in it and stuff, and that sometimes is offsets some of the scientists. They don't want religion mixed with science, and so puts them off, so you don't hear quite as much about it. But Arthur's book was definitely speaking about the floating city that's pictured in that Tesla talk that you have a copy of that.
Yeah, I'll put that on the site, that floating city soon.
Picture. Yeah.
I've been putting the Wall of Light on the web so people can read that. It's just fantastic to be able to read the story of the Venusian spaceship coming to visit Arthur Matthews, and that went on for 10 years.
They say the wall of light is what surrounds that floating city. Doesn't the picture that the artist rendition that was done that's in that Tesla talk is a little bit deceiving, because they show a bubble over the top of the city, but in reality it's the wall of light. The wall of light is the beam that Arthur talks about in the wall of light book itself, where he talks about the beam that's sent up, that is the actual beam that the craft followed back down to the Earth and went 30,000 miles up into outer space.
Yeah, and his Tesla scope that recently went on the site. That's amazing. He was communicating with the people from Venus. And this is how Arthur Matthews first learned that Tesla was from Venus. Basically, he was supposedly born or something like that aboard the spaceship. Well, they don't say born.
Delivered.
He was a new infant. And Margaret Storm talked about it in her book, but it's really Arthur Matthews's story that he was so close to.
Yeah, Arthur, the actual Tesla scope, initial Tesla scope was designed by Tesla, and he gave that to Arthur, and then the same with what he calls the hollow core coil that puts up the beam that says they follow down to Arthur's place, but. In Lac-Beauport, Quebec, but the Tesla scope he used for communication, and it documents quite a bit of it in the wall of light.
So since he said 1898, that was just before he went to Colorado Springs.
Tesla. Yeah.
Tesla.
You said what about 1898?
The Tesla scope was first made by Tesla in
Yeah, well, you're,
1898.
yeah, actually, he was speaking about the it was New York City, but it was as he was heading out to Colorado Springs, 1899, 1898, 99, and 1900. That he talks he matter of fact, in the Tesla talk, I even quote where Tesla speaks about the very fact. He makes the statement that he felt privileged to be able to get these signals that he felt were intelligible signals. And he goes on to speak about it. Matter of fact, I quoted him in that Tesla talk, where he brings up his reception of the first signals he got out in Colorado Springs. And that
But in other books of Tesla, they when he was out in Colorado Springs, they mentioned the planet
Right.
Mars, that he said he was talking with people from Mars, but it was really people from
No,
Venus.
he said both. He said both. Yeah,
Oh, he
I'm
said
trying to pull
both?
up the actual citation, because he actually says, he goes on to say, talk about intelligible signals, and then brings in Mars. As a matter of fact, he made a, there were a number of articles in the Electrical Experimenter in Science and Invention where he talks about the receiving signals from Mars and Venus. So, yeah, this year will mark, let's see, the coming year. He says here, "I can never forget the first sensation I experienced when it dawned upon me that I had observed something possibly of incalculable consequences to mankind. I felt as though I were present at the birth of a new knowledge or the revelation of a great truth. My first observation positively terrified me, as there was present in them something mysterious, not to say supernatural, and I was alone in my laboratory at night. But at that time, the idea of these disturbances being intelligently controlled signals did not yet present itself to me. The change I noted were taking place to, Changes I noted were taking place periodically with such a clear suggestion of number and order that they were not traceable to any cause known to me. I was familiar, of course, with such electrical disturbances as are produced by the sun, aurora borealis, and earth currents, and I was as sure as I could be of any fact that these variations were due to none of these causes. The nature of my experiments precluded the possibility of the changes being produced by atmospheric disturbances, as has been rashly asserted by some. It was at some time afterwards when the thought flashed upon my mind that the disturbances I had observed might be due to an intelligent control. Although I could not decipher them, their meaning, it was impossible for me to think of them as having been entirely accidental. The feeling is constantly growing in me that I had been the first to hear the greeting of one planet to another. A purpose was behind these electric signals." And this was in an article called "Talking with the Planets" in Collier's Weekly on March 1901. So
Oh.
he was saying more than he wasn't sure which planet at first, and then other articles later talked about speaking to Mars and to Venus.
Well, for Tesla to actually make this Tesla scope to communicate with these planets, wouldn't they have to teach him how to make it? I
Well,
mean, it's.
the basis of it was based upon his cosmic his patents on the cosmic ray utilization of cosmic rays and radiant energy, basically, not really radiant, but the cosmic energy that was coming to Earth. And when he was doing some of the translation of that, or the reception of it, he noticed also then that some of these signals were present.
And these signals, he thought, weren't coming from the Earth.
Weren't coming from the Earth, no. No, all see with all with any Tesla reception device like that, whether it be for cosmic or for just utilization of electrical energy or radiant energy, you always have one portion of your Tesla circuit grounded in the Earth. is always grounded in the Earth. So he is very aware of the energies and signals coming out of the Earth, because they talked about the woodpecker years later, but that was occurring from Earth signals way back, and resonant Earth. Like, I just recently, I was speaking to another scientist about it, and he's talking about how there's a constant large signal coming in at about 28 kilohertz, 25 kilohertz, 25 kilohertz, right around there, 25, 28 kilohertz. But anyhow, it says they're already using it, they're already broadcasting. I said, no. I said, if according to Tesla, you have to be in resonance with the Earth, if that was the pulse that was being heard, how does that mean that it's being produced by a government or an agency that's doing this? I said, how do we know that that's not the Earth's resonant signal that the Earth's putting out, that you have to put the actual circuit in resonance with? Because that's what we found when we did the transmission of electrical energy through the Earth. Not without wires, but using the Earth as the actual transmission cable, we had to have the resonant frequency of the Earth. And until we hit that resonant frequency, which Tesla says is at least 10,000 meters in wavelength, until we hit that resonant frequency, we weren't able to transmit through the Earth, or using the Earth as a transmitting wire or circuit wire. So it's a ground with the Tesla, any transmitter or a receiver, because the Earth is the cable that the instrument is using. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that Tesla scope he made in the early 1900s and 1917 also.
Yeah, 1922, there was a patent that Arthur had.
And then he told Arthur, I understand, when you should put this together when you feel the time is right. And then after he heard that Kenneth Arnold in 1947 had that sighting out in Washington State. Then Arthur decided, well, I guess it's now time to put the Tesla scope together, which he did. And then he said, as soon as he got it together, he started receiving messages from Venus. Right.
He was for sure directly connected. I mean, because like I said, we built the one that we were modulating and based on the Tesla scope. And we definitely had crafts appear. As a matter of fact, we know we were communicating, because one night I said, we've shown you our light, now show us yours. And overhead, three crafts appeared. One large one coming up like center, up through the center of our field of vision. And two of them, one to each side of the, that flew off to each side, to the right and to the left of this one center of craft. It was, and they sure did show us their lights, like we were showing them our light, because we had that the light beam communicator that we were using that we had produced.
So you were communicating with
Yeah,
the Tesla
we did
scope.
Communicate with it, but we hadn't received any kind. We didn't build any reception circuit until quite a while afterwards. We had the ability to broadcast, but not to receive. And then it was later that we built the receiver, which was based on a light beam. Like I said, we were just busy setting up arrays of a light reception. Which were like a focused solar cell but it worked in the dark. It was actually a cosmic receiver, cosmic ray receiver, more than a solar cell receiver, but it was working on light as well. And we just had built that, and then when we tore down the first circuit of the Tesla scope, so it just out of time with the receiver and the transmitter, and so we've had the receiver together and the design. Now we're going to have both of the whole scope together. We're hoping to put it into the direct tubular formation that Arthur had, because we have the glass Q chambers and all the rest of it.
I see. Oh. Wow, that's
yeah.
really exciting.
It's been a while. It's been a while, but I've been waiting. I figure when the weather gets warmer, it's a little bit cold to be outside doing much light beam signaling or anything from outdoors in this weather, at least. But
and the Teslascope has to be
outside.
Well,
preferably, yeah. I imagine we could probably never tried it through a window or anything, but some of the early signaling devices that we produced that were based on the plasma globes and that type of thing. Some of the early signaling devices we used were able to be used in from the inside of a vehicle or inside of a house, but it always works better when you're right outside. So especially it's like a, you know, even that's why Arthur's was like a telescope. Yeah, his patent 1,413,049 U.S. patent actually was a basic orientation of the telescope. They didn't tell you exactly the parts that they were using for the light beam modulation and reception, but it's basically that patent is everything that Arthur was telling his students, just like Tesla was telling his students. They patented and they put into articles, lectures, patents, and articles like Tesla's books. He had lectures, patents, and articles, and many other textbooks besides. And lectures besides that he published, but they put everything into lectures, into audio tapes, and like the one that you have on the site of all about the last 10 years with Tesla. All the devices, all of the things that he was spoken about were all patented or were cited in articles at one point or another, and are locatable. In common literature today, so just that.
And do you have a copy of Arthur Matthews' patent for the Tesla?
Yeah, it's in that Tesla talk too. The basic outline of the telescope is in that patent. I just we have 1,413,049. It was patented April 18th, 1922. That was also off of some of that data was also involved with the H. Grindel Matthews with the particle beam acceleration and direct what they like to call directed energy weaponry and all the rest of it. But Arthur's father was H. Grindel Matthews, the man who was very involved with the particle beam accelerator data that studies that the U.S. government and Canadian government had conferences on and classified the data of and all the rest of it. But if you look hard enough, it's still out there.
Well, that would be, I guess I already have that. I just don't realize I have that patent. I did. I don't.
Yeah,
think
it was in the Tesla
saying.
Talk too. Next to it was the Machine to End All War, the Machine to End War article that's on the website now.
Okay. Well. All right. Well, I know what patents look like.
Right.
I just didn't recall seeing a patent in there.
Yeah, the picture of it. It actually shows a scope very similar to the Tesla scope.
And what did Arthur call it?
This was called a. Should I have to blow it up here? Blow it up here.
Oh, I'm sorry. You
visual,
have to. Look.
Visual telegraph beam, I believe it was called. Or I'm trying to expand it here in size so I can tell you. I can pull the file if you want. But Arthur had several patents, one of which also was the production of electricity and production of power, where he patented the valvular conduit and the turbine, the gas turbine.
Arthur Matthews did?
All the see all the things that he was citing as technologies to be used that he was promoting that he was to be used in the floating city. That was the goal, was the floating city, and these technologies were patented, or if they weren't patented, they were written about. But in most part, they were patented. Arthur held patents for the valvular conduit, for the gas turbine. If you go to the Canadian patents, you'll see the Tesla turbine. That turbine was also a patent that Arthur had, and this is how you know he was the man carrying on Tesla's work after he made his disappearance in the 1940s. But Arthur continued on as a successor, and the way you know this is because the very devices that were patented in his name, in Arthur Matthews' name, would be considered to be patent violations and violations on Tesla's devices if he didn't have the permission to be using them. And he was working with Tesla last 10 years of his life, so he was definitely the Canadian protege to Nikola Tesla. Just the very fact that the patents are about Tesla turbines and everything else, he wouldn't have gotten away with that kind of a patent unless he was definitely the successor to, or apprentice to, or the continuer of Tesla's devices. So.
Well, it seemed like the Canadian Patent Office
Oh yeah,
understood that, but
absolutely. American, well, because the American Tesla Society and the rest of them don't want to talk about Arthur because he speaks about Venusians, extraterrestrials. Tesla was not of this planet. I personally don't believe that any of us were of this planet at one point in time. I believe that we were brought here by extraterrestrials as this grand experiment. Be they and that the different races may be different people from different planets for all we know. And if you look at the fact that early on it could have been extraterrestrials, and to this day they still talk about all the experiments that people go through, that when they're taken up and they're experimented on and their eggs are taken or this, that, and the other thing. Personally, I don't know if that any of that's true, but I can say that what is true is that they all have this common thread of going and laying on a table of and being experimented on. Even one of my close friends had a beam come out of a craft apparently that went and made him blind for 3 days, and he saw it for 2 days, and then sight the third day started to come back, and he thought that they shot him with a beam from a craft of some sort. And I said, how do you know that they weren't dealing with a stroke or a minor hemorrhage behind the eye? That they could have been doing laser surgery at a distance for all you know. That a lot of the stories of people they talk about, embryos growing in tanks and all these different genetic experiments and stuff. And whether you take it back into the Nazi regime with their whole Aryan lines of blood crossing, or whether you're blonde hair, blue eyed, or whether you're talking about the experiments today, you go down through history, even the petroglyphs that we've studied show the seizing which I'll get you some pictures of Indians holding up corn or maize to the sky, and there's an alien behind them grabbing them in one picture, and another picture where there's grappling hook. And when we check out these these petroglyphs. They're actually petroglyphs that were done by Anasazis that supposedly disappeared off the face of the earth. When you see these petroglyphs, these are thousands of year old petroglyphs that are showing the same thread of data that we see when people today talk about being taken up with Travis Walton, being taken up in his fire in the sky, and all the rest of them being genetic or being put on a table and something being done to them, examined or whatever. So it's how do we know that they didn't bring us here in the first place to implant us here as what the Christians talk about, in the Christian scriptures of the Bible, they talk about that God breathed the pneuma, the spirit, into the dust of the earth, and man became a living soul. How do we know that's not an analogy for extraterrestrials bringing us to this planet and creating on this race that we call the human race? So it's not hard for me to consider that Tesla could have easily been Venusian.
Well, it sure is easy for us to realize we aren't really part of this planet.
We're all aliens. We get down to the bottom line.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, all the birds are, when the birds are flying together and they all change direction, they're all communicating with one another. Or fish will change direction, or deer on the plains, they'll just quickly change direction. So they're all communicating with one another, but we humans don't seem to communicate real well or that well.
I know when I had my experience with extraterrestrials, they said they were from Venus, which caused me to go to seek out Arthur Matthews. And I was looking for viable resources. And that, to me, the one lesson in all this that I see is really pertinent is the fact that no matter what technology we pick, whether it be fuelless vehicles or whether it be Tesla's mechanical oscillator or whatever devices we're picking, that the scientists and patentees and patent holders and all the rest of it have all been seeking to do one thing with it, especially if they're into alternative energy and zero point energy and that type of an orientation, is for the improvement of the planet. So that the improvement of the human race and the elimination of the carbon footprint and the destruction of the environment and all the rest of it. By inventions that were less worthy than what we're talking about when we're speaking about these devices of Tesla and Matthews and Carr and T.T. Brown and all the rest of them. So these people were all trying to do one thing, and that was raise the like Tesla's talk speaks about the raising the problem of increasing human energy, raising the human energy of society or their capacity to think on higher things and develop higher things and overall energy, just in health and well-being. So these are all the same thing that could have been done at the very beginning. These creatures or people could have been extraterrestrials, whatever, been here to help the evolution of the planet and of society overall. But I believe that it's really all about.
Well, the things that George sends me, I'll be posting at the bottom of his HTML page underneath the hours for these recordings with George. And recently I just posted The Machine to End War on Nikola Tesla's page, and we'll talk about that a little bit next time. And also more of Arthur Matthews, which is very interesting. Here's a man who was so close to Tesla, and even the Tesla groups don't want to talk about Arthur Matthews.
Yet there exists so many citations. Just the other day, looking in the FBI records of Nikola Tesla, which are available, 400, 500 pages, whatever, of his. But one of the pages where it lists, everybody wants to know how real how real the Matthews was in Tesla's life, and whether it was a viable scientific source and all the rest of it, which is what the Tesla Tech people, when you go right into the FBI files and it states right there, Matthews. Now, they made a mistake. They put Grinnell or Grenville or Grenville Matthews, but this was, it says right there that who it was, and this was Arthur's father. It was right there in the FBI files. It's cited. So it's there's the real powers that be knew the people that were involved and with him, and it was even the list of all those people that Scherf was in there, and the one was Grenville Matthews, and I said Grenville Matthews. Huh, that sounds. I wonder if this has anything to do with Arthur. And I clicked on it and started looking. Sure enough, it was Arthur's father they're talking about, H. Grenville Matthews.
I see. Well, I'd like to see that, and maybe we can put that on the post
sure.
on the site too.
Sure.
Well, there goes another hour, and we'll talk to you next week, and hopefully we can do this again on Tuesday. That would really
All
be
right.
great. And thanks so much, George, because hearing about Arthur Matthews, this is great. You wrote to me and said, I knew Arthur Matthews when you were 23 years old.
Yep.
So we'll talk more All about right. that. And thanks so much. And
you're welcome. All right.
Okay.
Take care.
Okay. Hang on the line.
Yeah, no
I'll just say so long. Okay. So
Good
long. Bye, George.